Delighted that you to come.
What is it?
So this is just recorder. It will record both. I'll just say a word for a minute or two, and then we'll. Firstly, welcome to you for coming along this evening. We have some time for exploring together, and thank you, Pete, for making the time. And with the period of time that we have, we were talking together a few minutes ago in the kitchen, and in the two periods, one is with regard to the theme of vision and the exploration of the vision, how to actualize and make things happen. And the other will be the exploration of what Tantra means, what its application is, and flow backwards and forwards a little bit in this important area. And of course, one of the, from the Sanskrit, one of the original meanings of the word Tantra is to weave together. So there'll be some, hopefully, Tantra this evening of weaving together. And it's our intention as well, of course, is to make time for anyone who has any questions to ask either or both of us. Yeah. So any responses? Where would you like to begin? Anywhere in particular?
Who starts talking about Tantra? Because Tantra is meditation of two people together. It's very hard to meditate when someone sits that far. It's very hard to meditate when your sexual power are arising. But Tantra comes from the East, from Hinduism and Buddhism, and the idea is to get to be connected with yourself in the presence of the other. And that's a big challenge. For us, people who love to meditate, this is the biggest challenge, not a big, but it's a big challenge. And it's a very worthy challenge to explore. To find a partner that we can meditate together, face to face, and let whatever happens, and watch whatever happens. Connecting to our breathing, keep watching, and connecting to the other's person breathing. That can arise big fire, the excitement, and during this excitement, keep watching. This is a great secret, because it can heal a lot of sexual problems that men have and women have. The healing of watching. bring you to a place where it's a challenge. But you people,
you can do it. As you mentioned, Tantra has a very long tradition, primarily coming out of India, beginning some 2,000 years ago, and it has a tradition of the exploration for householders and nomadic ways of life, which include in that the exploration of energy, vitality, rituals, sexuality, poetry, art, theatre, music, all belongs to a rather extraordinary 2,000-year-old tradition, which in its original spirit was to break away from some of the formality of Buddhism, Hinduism, yogi, monk, and householder. It was a weaving together, an integrating process. In just listening then, and lovely to listen to, are you saying, directly or indirectly, that Tantra can only be practiced by couples?
In the book Vigyan Bahira Tantra, which is Niyukhas Shiva, Niyukhas,
Tributed to Shiva.
The practices given are for self-practice. And as you mentioned, Tantra in its origin is not something exclusively for couples practicing. Yes, with the sexual revolution in the past 50 years, we can some of the new tantra took tantra practice to sexual and couples sacred sex and spirituality, and it's okay. It's fine with me, although many times when the journalists from Laisha or from the Donne Signon in Maldives ask me, can you give me a tip for sexual
A tip?
So I see the problem with it, an advice.
Advice,
yes, in Hebrew. I see the problem of connecting sexuality and Tantra, because they always want the shortcut. But in the long run, if you practice Tantra, you don't really need a partner, as the monks in the old days were practicing with nature, with the valleys, with the trees. They were working with nature's energy. So am I. And so my friend Van Deren, that we practiced for so long time, and I see this guy, we practice that. We don't need women, because this existence is a partner. This is a partner. This is the whole existence. I love my wife. But I hugged this guy 2 minutes ago, and we practiced Tantra in a way. We were hugging, breathing, experiencing each other's breathing, and really relaxing in intimacy. The peak of my Tantric experience is with my girlfriend, with my wife. Yes. Because I let myself go. But I couldn't get there unless I practiced with friends, with nature, and ultimately with what I call God.
Please comment.
I'm happy to comment. Just a little bit past into the present moment. You mentioned Shiva, and in the tradition of India, Shiva was meditating in the caves in the Himalayas, and Parvati, the most beautiful woman of the Himalayas, came to the cave to see him. And this is the story, true or not, doesn't matter, but this, the way the story has developed over the history, and sat in front of Shiva, this hardcore yogi, ascetic meditator, there. And unlike the Buddha, who dismissed these visitations, Parvati sat in front of him, full lotus, same austere yogi posture. So anything Shiva could do, so could Parvati. And sat, and then Shiva opened his eyes, and in that moment of intimacy, the precious, enduring dance of Shiva and Parvati sparked.
Wow.
This is the first expression of Tantra. Mm. And the other expression of it, as you can see, I'm an India Walla. Krishna was playing with the gopis, that's his friend there, and Radha, the goddess of India, spotted Krishna, handsome, beautiful, and, flute playing,
juicy,
you know, a different icon to Shiva. And Radha spotted him. And she was a married woman there, and they connected just on the level of the eye. And that touched an extraordinary place of love. And that tantric moment, when two human beings fully weave together in the moment of the eye contact, set the tradition for 2,000 years.
Mm.
That's the power of Om, yes. The power of there, the awakening moment. And long may we continue to have them there. In moving from the richness of all the culture, the poetry, the dance, the love, the passion, the intimacies, the exploration of mutual sharing of energies, with another, or without, that the exploration of all of that then brings one into the precious and important area, as you mentioned, of intimacy between two people, man and woman, man and man, and in that kind of intimacy, something else can be touched upon, which Tantra reminds us of. What would you say, in the best sense, it reminds us of?
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you.
Oh. You know, my response to this is, I've got the easy job, I just ask questions. In your experience with your good wife,
then I'll respond after it, I promise.
What, in the intimacy of the moment, what's the sense that comes through?
There's this discourse, satsang from Osho, that I remember him saying, in the moment of the tantric act, and then think of the tantric act. Oh, well, the beloved becomes the lover, and the lover becomes the beloved. Again, the male becomes the feminine energy, and the woman becomes the masculine energy. And this is something amazing. It's like we breathe together, we are fully connected, we are moving, we are connecting with our breathing, and then the first cycle begins. And then it's like a spiral of energy. And we are working, we are pulsating it with our breathing. It becomes more and more rapid and deep. And some, it's like a generator. Okay, we generate electricity. And alternate current. It goes from minus, it goes minus, it goes so fast that eventually...
Eventually, yes, we know.
And this is a great moment of losing
yourself.
Suddenly you don't know who you are. This is a great moment of losing yourself and a breakup. It's hard making. This is my sense.
All right. The fact, maybe I should respond and then seems like unfairly put the question to you first. Firstly, in the communication and in the connection with another, which is moving towards the intimacies of the making of love, as strongly different, obviously, from having sex. The night and day difference there. And so to make love, there must be love. And for there to be love, there must be respect. And for respect, it's two people being able to sense and feel, as you're pointing out, each other very, very closely there. Sometimes, talking with some friends in the tantra world, that there is a little, there is some vulnerability to the use and the language of tantra as a means to intensify the experience, very breathing, the movement of the energies there, the intensity of passion, and so forth. It could be at the loss of the sacred. It could be mutually fulfilling, so to speak.
Indulging.
Exactly, indulging. Fulfilling certain kinds of intense sensations between the two people. Sometimes, of course, with orgasm flowing with it. Hopefully the man not falling asleep immediately afterwards, and some sense of a process of love and passion. If I could ask, with all of that, where or what would you say, I'll respond, but what would you say, if I may ask, what shows it's sacred, and what shows it's not intense indulgence, in mutual sensations.
Yes.
You need to be a little yogi.
A little?
Yogi.
You need to be a yogi.
A little.
All right.
Or more than a little. Because the intention makes the difference.
The intention makes the difference.
Yes.
Alright.
When the intention is right, so you have a watcher that watches the indulgent part of you that wants to go into sex, is being watched by another part of you who wants to be. So this guy wants to go into
fucking.
I won't say it. This guy wants to go into
fucking.
The regular. Can you say fucking in Belgium? I don't know. And the dialogue between these two is the essence of the practice. Because if you have this guy who wants to go into your orgasm, and it's a male or female, it means that you're alive. Good. this yogi, this practitioner, who remembers to breathe and remember that his partner is not an object, and you go back to the circle, then the magic happens.
Then the what?
The magic happens. So it is true that until the magic happens, sometimes you find yourself falling and coming too soon and losing your awareness. It's a good practice. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you fail. And you fail and you feel like failure. It's not a nice feeling, but it shows that you go a new way. And sometimes a new way, you lost it, you lose it. But I'm all in favor of practicing and failing, and sometimes you indulge, there's something I should say. I started practicing tantra not with my girlfriends, but in tantric workshops in Pune, in Osho's ashram. So I practiced with old ladies, young ladies, beautiful ladies, not so beautiful ladies, and I had to practice breathing and being. And practice again and again. So you practice. And then when you come to a place that you have a good relationship and you can offer this Shiva Parvati experience to your beloved, wow, that's great. Then you can do it without your clothes, with full respect, with a candle on and the lights, the incense, and you can do the intention. And before that, you practice.
I visited, if I may say, in Osho in a previous incarnation when he was Bhagavan Rajneesh. It's in the 1970s. I had two meetings with him. I was already a teacher, so it was an understanding that I met with him and had the opportunity as well to meet with a number of Bhagavan's disciples, followers, and lent an ear on some of the different kinds of workshops, etc., which are taking place. And just to respond a little bit there, the act of, as you point out, of intention is fairly key, because how easy it is, if we're not in touch with ourselves, in terms of energy and vitality, nor in touch with another, and her or his energy and vitality, then the past, which is the wanting, the desiring, will push upon consciousness, and it will become easily goal-orientated. And that pressure of the energies with the wanting, the sexual desire, and the goal will, in the heat, will put two people in a way out of touch with each other. And sometimes, in the act of the love-making, goal-orientation will be for oneself, the I, me, and my world, what I want from it, and sometimes it can shift also, like it's still problematic, towards the other, satisfying her or satisfying him, and then one coming after. Is there anything else besides the movement of the intention which you would regard as important in when two people are engaged in such an exploration?
Good intentions, exactly. You want some sacredness in your love life. Yes. Especially if you were active in senseless lovemaking, like me, when I was single. So, there's time comes when we say nothing. I will not have this kind of sex ever in my life. It's like, it was like, shua. Like a vow.
Like a what?
A vow.
Bow.
Bow.
Bow. Bow. Yeah, nice.
I will not have this kind of mindless, emotionless sex in my life. I want a good partner. So that's the beginning of the intention. All before was practicing, and now I'm eating the food.
Right. I quite agree with the act of the intentionality that is important. In the passion of lovemaking, though, obviously it can be forgotten there. And if there is enough depth in the being, then the love and the understanding will give support, of course, if the intention does fade away there. You had used this popular word in Israel, rapidly fading in Europe, called God. What was that reference to? Because some of us...
When you don't have this entity.
It's an unusual word. I don't hear it very often.
It's not a good word. Godliness, is it?
Eh?
Godliness.
Godliness. Not bad. Yeah, sure.
Not bad.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Godliness.
Godliness. All right. Okay. For some of us, and including moi, who are not in a relationship, have had the benefit, wonderful benefit, of mindful and committed relationships over the years, our communication about Tantra could seem, to some of us, rather exclusive. Mostly for the benefit of the twos, the pairs. As they say in India on the trains, are you one person or two? And some of us have not yet worked it out what that means. Is it possible to explore all of this in which there isn't any senseless sex, as you said, to us. Yet the eros of life, which I think is authentic Tantra, the great romance of life, which is authentic Tantra, can be really felt and known as something sacred without the partner. For those of us this evening who currently are not in a relationship, can there be authentic Tantra, the eros of life, the erotic, without the partner?
Whenever I remember to breathe.
Pardon?
Whenever I remember to breathe.
When you remember to breathe.
Breathe deeply. Wherever I am, I can be in the car, I can be in a meeting. That moment, I make love. Because I inhale existence. I inhale if I'm in a meeting, if I'm talking to you, now I'm inhaling the air that you just exhale. So we are making love. I'm taking you in.
And I brushed my teeth before I came out. So carry on.
So I really try to remember. To make love in existence, to make love. I even find myself making love with men, with men I like, I have them, I feel masculinity. I breathe, I try to breathe. And sometimes I forget to breathe, then I become hard. Sometimes I fight with my girlfriend, and I'm sure that she's wrong. In this place where I'm at now, we have two kids. One is 10 months old and the other is 3 years old. The tension in the house is so almost violent. Two little creatures need your energy all the time. And remembering to breathe and remembering to make love to your girlfriend is the thing that I want to remember most. Whenever I forget, I see the effect in the house. So it's really life-saving. It's love-making. It's like making room inside of myself. It's breathing and being in something that is very tenseful for me because I was very free man. I lived anywhere I wanted, anything I wanted. And now I have a family and I want to be there for them and it's very hard for me. So the meaning of Tantra is much, much bigger than making love to the wifey.
Yeah.
The person is there.
Yeah.
It's an essential thing.
As you say with those of us who are their parents, and therefore the love has to go in your case, four ways. The two kids, yourself, as well as other people in your life, of course, there. And sometimes it isn't easy, and Tantra does explore that in wonderful practices, as you said, including the mindfulness of breathing there, to enable the energies and love to flow. And of course, sometimes one partner or another, because of the challenge of being the father or being the mother, there with the tiredness, morning, noon, and night, that sometimes loses it. Exactly, it loses it. That the energy for the erotic, for the intimate periods may fade, or it may be present for one and not for the other. And again, it takes that clarity and that intentionality. As you were saying, but if I may say, being a teacher of mindfulness of breathing, and like yourself, traveling a lot, I can't say when I remembered sitting in a traffic jam, mindfulness of breathing, or on a plane. I can't remember finding it particularly erotic. So, can you give me some instructions?
I think it's connected to the question that you asked me about God.
Yes.
Because I do see existence of a living, vibrating entity. It's not a personal entity.
No.
So I make love to it. And in the form of its feminine, I can see her challenging me.
Yes.
And I have a teacher called David Deida. I love her so much.
David Deida. Yes. Oh, yes. David Deida. Mm-hmm.
Talks about masculinity and the meeting of polarities. It is very tantric because it talks about the challenge of polarities and how the other makes you go out of your center and how you want to conquer it and then you lose it and the dynamic between men and women. So practicing it with the great lady, with the Advirah Gola in the Kabbalah, it's like the big mistress, big wife. Existence changing all the time, challenging me, turning, like my wife, she's unacceptable, totally. She's a woman. Experiencing that and keeping my center, it's making love with her also when she's nervous. It's not that I'm fully there, but that's my goal. I want to be centered, breathing, and not to get stuck, because sometimes when she's mad at me, I get mad. But sometimes when I'm connected to myself, I can dance with her while she's mad. I can take her madness and turn it into love. So it's all about making love. That's what makes me a tantric person, and you, Todana teacher, Vipassana leader. We're different. Here, we're different. I want to make love with existence. Sometimes more passionately and sometimes calmly. And I'm sure that if you're sitting in a plane and you practice your breathing, maybe you don't see this making love, You are vibrating presence. And that's something that the stewardess gets, and even the pilot sits in the cockpit gets. And that's the tantric point of view. You are changing your world by making love with it, by taking it in, accepting it out, and dancing it.
No. I just wonder a little bit here whether in the language and the feeling and the expression, maybe there's ways or differences of taking of the view here. So what I had in mind with mindfulness of breathing as a man in this world who has a wealth of experience with relationship, not one of them has been senseless, and opportunity to really listen inwardly and outwardly and carefully to the precious dynamic of relationship, both in the lovemaking form and in the variety of other forms. And in that, those kinds of expressions which take place, it brings in the element of the eros, that I do regard that as one of the most precious qualities and feelings. It may include in it the touch, but I, and I'm sure others as well, as you've been pointing out, can feel and know that sometimes, for wisdom, for love, for respect, that the sharing that takes place between two people, as you said, with men and women there, that the sharing that actually takes place carries something of the preciousness of the romance of life in it, which is fulfilling in the event. So it's not going to lead to a relationship, it's not going to lead to the bedroom, it's not going to lead in other, but something about sense, the poetry of life, is meeting between two people, or between a group of people,
here and now,
which is expressing something in your language of making love, in the best sense of that, in the vibration of life. But there are situations, and I'll stand by what I said here, forget the Tobin and teacher opinion for a moment, and there are situations in life where the mindfulness of breathing, I would say, decisively is not about that. I would say it doesn't have to be about that. I would say in such situations where there's a drama, there's some very painful information, there is nothing romantic about it, there's nothing erotic about it, one has just been told something, and at that time, the mindfulness of breathing is important. As an example, I was in Auschwitz visiting last September. I spent the day there. Do you know how many times I had to breathe in and out on that day? Do you know how many times I had to walk away sometimes and come back to the guide because it was difficult just to breathe for what he was telling us? When I arrived back in Krakow, stayed there, I had a text message. One of my best friends, Nadama, a former disciple of Osho, who's done an immense amount of work for me, immense amount, for 25 years, international coordinator of my programs, producing my CDs, the main link for myself with my student. He dropped dead suddenly from a blood clot at the age of 55 there. Believe me. I was just mindfully breathing out there, using my resources, my practice, just to breathe in and out, and just to settle with this, take a walk, breathe in and out, because this man I loved to bits. And when I saw Dagmar, his partner, she gave me all of the ashes at his request. We placed them in the lake in Germany. He said, I want my ashes to go to water, he put. And I took them to the lake near Bodh Gaya. I took the ashes to the river Ganga at Varanasi, and I gave them to Roger from Switzerland, who took them to the lake, the fire ashes, in Mount Kailash.
Wow.
There.
Wow.
There. So there are times, I fully agree with you, when the making of love and breathing in and out with another or alone is important, it can extend itself, but there are situations where breathing in and out has a completely different purpose to help be at peace with the situation, keep our heart and mind clear and open.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. It's funny, it's, here we differ, because I have a similar story. When my grandmother was about to die, I was in Shipping, in Ashram Bamikvah, and my sister called me. She said, "Grandmother is going to go, please come." And I went to Bet Chaim Meir, to Meir Hospital, and she was there, and she was lying there, and there was nothing I could do. I held her hand. And then what? She was still alive, the machine went on. And then I decided to go outside to the corridor, and I sat there, and I breathed with her in my language, like love to my grandmother.
Yes.
Sounds crazy, but that's what I did. I focused on my breathing, and I focused on the beep that goes there. And after some time, my mother came out crying, "The machine stopped! She called the doctor! She's dead!" And she was running to the nurse. I thought, how strange. That's exactly what needs to happen. Grandmother is dead. But that's her daughter, and that's how she reacted, and that was okay. And I felt that, okay, so still making love misses the point. So when your friend died, you just went into yourself and you had like connecting mindfulness. When my grandmother died, I was connecting and went outside to her presence, whatever I was dancing with, and I didn't know that she would die from it. I didn't know that. I just did it, and suddenly she was gone. Maybe this dance that we had, I think it was 2 minutes. It was nothing big. I just went there, connected to the pulse, and then it's gone. So, I don't think that we really do something different. It's just a way of thinking, maybe because of Osho was a tantric master, maybe because I practiced tantra so long. For me, seeing the dance, the ever-going movement between me and the existence, I call it making love, but maybe it's not such a good expression. Maybe it misses some of them, my audience.
So, I just think of the time a little bit, and I'm really appreciating and enjoying the exchange that we had. Could we move, because one of the themes that to touch upon here, is the area of vision there. I know Tovana has a vision in terms of center, and how to make something happen there. And I'd just like to hear your good voice on, because I know you have a center or two centers, or they've generated something, and sometimes in life too, we wish to make something happen. Requires the cooperation of other people there. Just say a little bit about that process for you.
It's very complicated. It's not so easy to say something, because it's really complicated. To create something, I think everybody who tried to create even a painting knows how fast something, someone comes from inside and watches it and criticize. So, if it's so hard to do something simple as write a song or write a book or paint, it's so hard to create something concrete.
Yes.
And I don't have something simple to say about it. I can say again that vision, to be clear about intention, to be clear why, is more likely to make things happen than thinking how. How brings many times something that is not usually connected. But why? Why am I doing it? If you know why, then things will start falling into place. I will tell Scott, so I wrote a book. I published it 2 months ago. But I wrote it 6 years. And I edited it 4 years. And I was mind-fucking about it so much because it wasn't good. It wasn't good. I sent it to book publications. They turned it back. 6 publications. And again, I started from the top, from the Idiot of Honor and Keter and Moabit and then. And went down to the spiritual small. I went all the way down and everybody rejected it. So I edited and re-edited and re-edited. And then I realized, what's the problem? My intention is not clear. I don't know who I'm writing to. I'm writing, but on my shoulder stands people from Galeza and from the industry that I used to work, which is the media industry. And then there are the teachers that I want people to think I'm very wise and right. And there's this and that and father and mother. I realized I don't know who I'm writing to. I didn't have clear intention. And then I asked myself, who do you want to write to? And the question was very clear to me, to my students? No, I don't have students. So my people that I teach, I don't know, people that work with me. And suddenly it was very clear. I started moving the blocks. I edited and it went all the way. And it was very, I love it. I love it and people love it and it's a good book. So it takes what I'm trying to say. It takes so long to find the intention. You think you know what you're doing. Why?
I'm curious, but it's a good promotion for the book. So, really in the media. What's the title of the book? And would you say a few words about the book?
Yes.
This book is called The Amazing Grace.
Amazing Grace.
And it tells the story of the Hasid. Hasid. Hasidic, you know Hasidic?
Amazing Grace is a kind of Christian thing, isn't it?
No, but it's just two words. All because right. The Hasidic side of me sees Amazing Grace everywhere, makes love to God everywhere. But then I have a Nazir. Mama. So this story is about Mama. About two pieces of my soul. Yes. The monk, which is very strict. He's a meditator, he's a yogi, he likes borders, he's a director, he goes to the television and he knows exactly how things should be done and not. And then there's the Hasidic guy, the Tantric guy, who wants to dance, make love, and to have an easy life. And these two were fighting inside of me all my life. And that's why I didn't.
Who won? Who won?
Hasidic guy.
Really?
Yes. Right. With the help of the monk. With the help of the hermit. With the hermit.
Of the hermit.
The monk and the hermit are connected. But eventually I found myself prepared falling into love with a wife and making family and going to a simplest place. And that's, the book is the story of my search. Oh. And I had many down moments.
Yes.
I have this wife that I married and she's not talking to me to this day and it's 14 years. I hurt her so much. And in this book, in a way, I apologize. I tell the story from my point of view. I sent my book to this woman. And
And did she respond?
Not yet.
Not yet.
And sent her an email writing, no.
Well.
No. And she said, I'm still reading it. She's reading it very slowly. I read it, so.
Very sweet.
Yes.
It sounds just in the listening that with the good lady there's some again the intention and some lovely healing process, which is precious and beautiful, and may it be that the response can come for the two of you. Our love is with you both, and then can't it be possible for the yogi and the monk, the austere Shiva-wala inside of us, and the
Krishna,
and Krishna, the and life, clay, the romance, yes. And the erotic and the tantric, can't they quite happily coexist within our being?
You answer.
Yes.
Of course. Of course.
I wish it was easy way between these things. I always sometimes I see myself too much country guy, too much indulging, too much comfort zone, and then Shiva is coming and asks me to go to a retreat or to go to do something. And then when I'm too much hard on myself, this country guy comes. Now they live inside of me happily. Agony and I will live together in perfect harmony. Mm. You know this song?
Pardon?
This song.
The perfect harmony.
Yes.
No,
harmony, ivory, living in perfect harmony. It's a song of Polycarpy. And you know, these two. It's also, Paul McCartney is a sweet guy, and John Lennon, that I loved always, is like the hard guy, and he's like the rebel. All my life, I'm a very split person. I think everybody's split, but I took a life work of naming, labeling my split personality.
Yes.
So John is one, Paul is one, the hermit, and the apostle, and the lover and
the yogi
and so on, and I'm 44 now. I'm not that old, but I'm old enough to see that if you do when that life that went that zigzagging and the slaloming eventually gets closer to the source, to the center. I'm not in the center. I'm too young to be there. I'm not a master. I don't have any disciples. But I feel myself better. I feel like life is evolving good for me. I'm making more money. I'm more loving. I'm more centered. So I expect life to go that way more. I have a good feeling about the future.
Lovely. I never... I'm out of the old school. I never quite equated life is good and making more money is going together. But and just in terms of the wealth and the richness of our inner life, that some traditions do lean more towards the yogi model. I have concern, I'm sure you have concern as well, in which there is a certain kind of excessive discipline on formal meditation, which is powerful, it has a certain strict approach to it, but if the feeling life is not rich and deep, there are a few meditators around who, instead of
touching upon the depth of rich feeling are actually sitting on them.
That's my experience also.
Yeah, and that's the tragedy. And feeling life can get dry, and then in comes the language of detachment, equanimity, but in fact it's an alienation from the wealth of the feeling life. And I think it was last year that Arya Bursain came, the man of contact improvisation. And in some of the festivals that I've been to in Britain, and I think festivals are wonderful because it's a renewal of the sense of the tribe. I think it's very, very important. And there I saw this wonderful contact improvisation movement which allows the touch and contact and the intimacy and all that you've been touching upon. And I thought it was just a delight and a joy to see. And then encouraging some of my beloved Dharma friends to explore that as well. And I think there is some bridging that's needed here, where too much on the one, let's say the tantra, can be at the expense of the quiet, focused, concentrated discipline, which we need sometimes to be really present to life. Kind of the Shiva, Buddha spirit, we could say. But for those who lean too much in that direction, need therefore to engage, to feel, to express love, to touch with the intentions which are warm and connected. And therefore I say we can be fully respectful to both.
This is why we teach breathing, as in we, like,
yes,
a chorus. But I feel like, wow, this is the only teaching, because finding the center between in-breath and out-breath, finding the center in yourself between the yogic and the tantric, finding the center, that's the only search, and you can go all your life doing it and making more accurate and more accurate, and that's the dance, and that's love, and that's being, and that's, I think, that existence when she brought us here, she wanted us to live and to be juicy, but then she didn't want us to be indulging and losing ourselves. So the fine line, the middle way.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yeah. The middle way, yes.
I've heard that before.
It's so good, yes, when I'm in the middle, it's not sexy. No. When I was younger, when I met Osho, Osho took us to the extremes. He was into dancing, and his disciples at first were into drugs, and they were really crazy people. So when I was there the first time, the middle way didn't talk to me. No. Young people don't like talking about it, the idea of middle way. It sounds boring. But as I got older, I want to tell everybody the secret. I want everybody to know the secret of finding the center, and from there it's like the tightrope walker. The tightrope walker, he walks, the tightrope walker, and if you look at it from afar, he looks very stable. But if you zoom in on his legs, he's constantly moving. Yeah. A little here, a millimeter there. But he is dancing his way to the second, to the other side. And that's where I'm going. I'm still moving. I'm still as me, I'm still moving. I'm vibrating. But I see it getting narrower and narrower. And I see myself when I be older. 60, 70, then, so I have a long way to go, and I'm going to dance my way.
That's it. Very good. Some of us here, and I had the opportunity to touch a little bit this morning, that quite often, everywhere, society is, seems to me, top-heavy with politics, economics, oligarchies, corporate power, religion,
patriarchy, etc. And some of us, clearly herself and myself, are much more interested in the grassroots coming up and taking authority, finding our own power, finding a way out from this. One extreme is the repression of religion, and the other is all the massive amount of heavy-duty pornography that goes on in some ground on the intentions, on love, on intimacy, on the sacred, in a whole variety of different ways. It's a grassroots movement. What do you see are the benefits and the problems of where we're kind of freeing ourselves, religion and orthodoxy, from institutional life? I mean, of course, religion here, which has never felt comfortable with some of the things we've touched upon today. But what do you see as some of the any problematic areas in grassroots change, new expressions of spirituality that we are touching?
I think we have no choice.
No choice.
I believe in karma, I believe in reincarnation, I believe that in the evolution of the soul. So I think I don't have a choice. I think most of the people in this room don't have a choice. We are in this movement of the grassroots movement. And it's not easy sometimes because you maybe wish you had the power of the institution, but no, it's not. We don't want to be there. And the grassroots, bottom up. Yes. We're changing the world this way, slowly. Before they will change the world.
Yes. And as we've touched upon, it's a community of women and men working together. And the voices of women have become increasingly more, profoundly more significant. And that, you know, an event which is going on and providing for us men, an opportunity for a different kind of leadership and a different kind of authority, which is more full and rich. And that exploration, I think, is the direction that we all have to find and to go in and work together with.
Amen.
Amen, our women.
Together.
Anything else today to anything more tonight to can we turn it over to some questions now? I think we've had a good for a quarter of an hour, would that be okay? If you have any questions, you'd like...
I have a question.
Yeah, you.
I can ask you a question?
Yes, sir, please.
I never said this way. Never.
Never?
Never. I'm too much embarrassed.
Are you?
And it's very... I said it's very... I'm privileged. But I have a problem. Can you help me, please? I don't feel that I can take the place.
No.
No.
Which place?
The place of the one who knows.
And can you hear the voice? You can hear my voice?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. Okay. What's the factor here? For some people, that I do agree and understandably, it's a little uncomfortable about taking the place or, so to speak, assuming the posture of one who knows. And it is an important area. For yourself, what form seems easier, one? And secondly, what makes it a bit more uncomfortable or difficult here? What form do you prefer, like circle or whatever, and what makes it a little bit more comfortable?
In my groups, I do a circle, and I part of the circle.
Yeah.
And sometimes in my men's group, I do a lot of men's group because I feel men really need men, really to share.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I do a lot of men's work. Mm. And in these workshops, I'm one of the participants.
Yeah.
I share my problems and my difficulties. And this is the easiest for me. Like, I don't know, buddy. I just, yeah, you pay me. You pay me. But I'm one of you. It's
yeah.
That, and I don't know why. Maybe it's ahead of me. But when I sit here in on your side, I feel, wow, maybe is it true? Can I sit here?
Yes. Clearly. Is it, I'm just curious here, is it that the form, we could say, from the standpoint of the eyes, it does communicate two authorities, both men, sitting on a higher position. It was higher earlier on than Robert and I. We took a few of these off because up in the clouds. And so does the eye and the form sitting here put out an impression for you, I or we, are the one who knows. Does what the eye sees give that impression so strong one can't get away from it?
But you know, no impression, you know.
Pardon?
You know. You have white hair and you've been on this path for so long and you speak in it, and you know.
When
was it that you knew that you know? Really?
Yeah, you can ask. Firstly, just going to the upper regions, white hair, as we know, has got
nothing to do
with wisdom, etc. Just hop down the road or up the road to the Knesset. I'll still try to answer the question, the important one. Is there something in communicating and speaking where hopefully the quiet voice of authority, which says, hopefully without a lot of ego, but which says, you know, I have explored this, I have experienced this, as you were speaking, is there something problematic about communicating to a group of people I know?
No, but not me. Everybody can, no problem.
I feel like it would be easier for me if someone would must meet me.
Yes,
he would take the sword and say, okay. Knight of it, you are now.
Okay. All right.
You are seraphic.
Right.
Go and speak. I need it from the outside.
Okay.
Can you do it?
I hereby authorize you.
They are laughing because you cannot get it from the outside.
To keep that lovely warm voice of yours alive and well, with the clear intention, which is respectful in communication, which enables forms to take place. And so far, in listening to you, I can say honestly that your lovely voice, I haven't felt an ego of I know.
No.
And there is a voice which is, comes across to me with the joy of sitting next to you, and hopefully for others, which is warm, it carries an exploratory feeling, it's invitational to others to listen, and therefore I would say you have the full right, the human right, to sit up here and speak and share
Amen.
With others.
Amen.
Amen.
I will tell a story. In the end, a story in the end. My biggest production called Optimus Cosmic, Cosmic Optimism. It was in 1999. I did a big television tour in India. It had good rating. But during this time, exactly on the days that the show was on the air, and we were happy people in India having cosmic experiences, it was exactly the time when my wife left me. This guy.
Same the time when your wife left you.
Yes. And I was sitting and crying. I remember myself sitting with tissues and seeing the first chapter that got like 30% rating. It was an amazing something, and I wasn't there to enjoy it because I was so depressed and feeling miserable and everything. And then I had like a nervous breakdown. I cried a lot for 3 days. And then I had a vision. And in this vision, someone shouted in my ears, "Shut up."
Really?
A voice, yes, a voice came and told me, "Shut up. You don't understand anything. Just shut up." And I felt he was so right. I felt like I'm moving, I'm making big statements without really understanding what I'm saying. In that time, I was part of Aliyah Walk. It was a party that wanted to make legalize cannabis, and I went there and I was making so much noise. I wasn't so much connected to myself, and I broke down, and I heard this shut up voice. And since then, it's in my ears. Since then, I keep hearing something, "Shut up. Shut up." And now I feel like it's not really helping. So really, what you said was really nice to hear, because I really need from outside someone to tell me, "Speak up." Enough with the shut up. You did yourself. It was 1999. It was a long time ago. Now it's 2012. You can speak up again.
Yeah, good story. Very good. Very good. Yeah. I also am one of those who have been in India, and my beloved partner, this is quite some years ago, as we say in English, found the grass on the other side of the fence greener. Which is understandable. And
what happened to
him? She
she left.
She left. In a way, coming back to what we were discussing and touching upon, and when I got back home, we'd been together 6 years in the relationship. When I returned home, she said, "When you get back from India," I was probably 5 weeks or so, 30 years ago, maybe, 25 years ago, she said, "When you get back home, in the English winter," she said, "I might be gone," so it wasn't totally out of the blue, "and we had agreed in our relationship that if one ended the relationship, then that this one would leave the home. You know, we have a little, instantly forgettable little place. And would take half the things out there." I have to say, when I got home, a bit tired, then the travel in the English winter, walked in, and no partner and no daughter, 3 years age, my daughter at that time, Nishana. And I went, "Phew." And again, more breathing in, more breathing out, and long walks, and all of that. What I would say in that period of time, that the, as it were, the yogi in me, I spent 10 years in the East without coming back to Europe.
Wow.
So the yogi in me, or the monk in me, or the one who loves his aloneness in me, that was a really helpful support. And that's why I say, when we were talking together, that yes, in this case to us, that the man of passion, the man of love, the romantic man, the intimate man, but of course, as we pointed out especially and very well, the dynamic of that does require often the cooperation and love between two people. If the other is strong in us as well, the love of aloneness, the love of presence, especially the love of friends there, that voice will come in strongly, and one can say yes to that voice, and to the old voice which is not working, shut up.
Mm. Amen.
Amen.
It did happen to me.
Mm. Yes. You can't be a teacher if not being through a lot, huh?
I think it tends to. Yeah.
It opens.
The Buddha spoke that. The wisdom which brings about this empathy. So sometimes, not everything, but sometimes our experiences, in this case, relationships, come and go, and you know, people pulling away from us, you know, all of that, that experience through life seems to help considerably with the understanding, with the love, and one then says, yes, I know this, therefore I have a voice which allows me to sit here and speak about it.
Oh, that reminds me a story about Baal Shem Tov. You know Baal Shem Tov? He is a great Hasidic guy.
Oh, right.
He was the first of the Hasidic. And he was traveling in Poland or wherever and meeting the Jews.
Mm.
They went and talked to him. And while one day, his staff sees him going out of the office, closing the door, and going, you know the story? Going wide, goes to his room, and he didn't go out for 2 days. He felt sick. And after some time, he went out, so they asked him, what happened? And he said, did you see the guy that went in before? He was sitting in front of me. And I couldn't find him inside of me. I couldn't find him. So I went deeper, and I couldn't find him anywhere. And I got really scared. I thought it was a yetzer hara. I thought it's like a devil. I thought it's like the satan. And it shook me, and I had to go and heal myself. And I hear from what you're saying that really experiencing life helps you to be more empathetic.
Yes.
Because you find everybody inside of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And that's what experience does.
Yes. Any questions? Anything you'd like to ask last 5-10 minutes? Or say, or respond. Either or both.
Speechless.
Yes, please.
I'd like to hear it pick up. Going back to the making love and having sex.
Mm.
You just touched upon it, saying something about respect.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if there's more to it. Tell the difference even when you're in a relationship with someone you feel that you love and are being loved.
Mm.
Like if you could just say a few more words about the difference between the two.
Yeah.
How can you cultivate making love?
In relationship and the intimacy of it. From a mindful meditative practice, if we have the capacity to really rest in the moment there, then in a way the acts of touch and making love can come to a rest at any time. Because sometimes the partner or oneself just wishes to be held and no more,
Sometimes the heart just wishes to be hugged and kissed and no more. Sometimes the partner wishes for hands and body to be very, very close and no more. Sometimes to nakedness and no more. Sometimes to deep love-making and sometimes flowing on into acts of warmth and expression, etc. If we have the capacity with the making of love just to rest in the moment, which two people, sometimes spoken or unspoken, can feel at home with, I think that's very important. This another aspect, I think, of the making love, and that was in the ways that we've touched upon as well, is the sense of the making of love, which may not include any touch at the time. It's sometimes in the eyes, it's in the candles, it's in the shared meal. And I think it's especially important for women, and something we men often have to remember well, that the movement in towards the expression of making love is because the journey before it has been one of making love. Mm. And that seems to develop a real sense of trust. Because without it, that love and the care is there, it will seem like, for the other, it will seem like pressure. Now a man, as an example, being a man, can't just, you know, come home and go to bed with a woman and expect that she's just available for lovemaking. If there has been no real care and love and sensitivity and affection and appreciation beforehand, and I mean days, weeks, and it's a gathering event. And quite often, when there is a crisis in the relationship, there, it does seem quite often that one of the questions I often ask, has it had an impact on the lovemaking? If the lovemaking has really stopped, sometimes it just stops, and that has continued for some time, there may be a real crisis there, and it's going to require some skill and love and communication for some healing to take place, which then can then lead on to lovemaking. You know, it's the power of, I think, what we're talking about. Lovemaking is an incredible power. I mean, it's an incredible energy and vibration. And sometimes my concern always about the kind of one-night stand is that though two people may, as it were, agree to it, and may just have one night, it's said beforehand, you know, it's just a one night, etc. But the potency of making love can, with one person or the other, touch such a deep place inside that there is a deep wish and yearning for the intimacy to renew itself. But the other person said it's one night, he or she is just gone. So we shouldn't underestimate the potency of what intimacy and the making of love is all about.
Start by meditating together. If you are a meditator and your lover has a potential, this is the foreplay of before the foreplay. That's the energetic foreplay. You just sit there and you connect to yourself, and he sits there and he connects to you. And then you realize you want to hug. You don't want to fuck. Maybe you realize you want just a capiot. Maybe it's
spooning.
Spooning?
Spooning.
I think that the idea of making, the idea of meditating together, for you, for in the outer world you cannot say it, people don't understand it, but for you it's like the best way to start love making. And if you do go to the ecstatic love making afterwards, you will see that because you were meditating before and you balance your energy, this would be different lovemaking, always. Mm. So you might find,
feel weirdo.
You want to meditate before? How can I say that? It sounds so... But it makes a big difference. Just watch 5 minutes, 10 minutes, just connect yourself, keep connecting yourself, then hug. Maybe you go to the sky and slow, and you just hug. Intimacy starts with intimacy with myself.
Any other questions? Yes, please.
Yeah, I was very moved by when discussing vision and manifesting vision, the way you prioritize the why to the how of doing something. And, but then you left me a little bit confused when you switched it to who and not the why. You said you realized that who you were writing for.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask, is there a pure why? Which doesn't entail an audience.
Inshallah, Evandi, you go, Shamaka, Shatabad, Lama, Pelosel, Zasababa, Rafat, Shamaka, She, and some Kavens, the Kaya, the Sion, the Sever Shasham, Kuba, to Kaki, Ayam Kova, and the Achesses, the Lafok, the Kotaki, which I can. The answer is yes. In a way, why am I writing? I wasn't clear until I realized I'm writing to the people that I work with. So then the why became crystallized. I realized.
But they're not the same question. To whom or why? To me or to different questions.
So why am I writing to them? What do they need? What do I have to give them? This is a different writing, and now I know why I'm writing. Because I want them. Only them, not the critics from the Aretz, Iton Sforim, not anybody. Just them. Why was very clear. And making Ashram Lamipal, Desert Ashram, I had a vision for Sannyas people, for disciples to have a place. That was the why was very clear. And 10 years until now, it's still working, and the two people that working are Sannyas. So when the why is clear, the thing goes good.
Some limits between people who are a couple but still close and don't have some kind of intimacy which is not sexual. And I was curious if such kind of practicing would it make it a problem, make it confusing, or will it can it solve.
I'm not sure about it. Maybe Ibu? How should we read?
In Tirgul,
they are not couple? Practicing with someone who is single like you. Very good. Very good. What's the problem? Why not? Meditating together is always good. Meditating together is always good. Just try it, and then you'll know.
Natalia, I may or may not be answering the question.
The small thought that comes to mind. Sometimes for those of us who are not in a relationship and yet still love and appreciate with another or others, non-sexually, as you mentioned, the intimacies of deep sharing. And sometimes we talk about the light things of life, but sometimes there's some deep sharing of our personal story, of our experience, of a connection with another person. Right? Do feel that's precious and wonderful. It's a kind of meditation or a sensitivity between two people there. And it's very, I find for myself, and hopefully for others as well, very nourishing and fulfilling.
if one is in that situation and one is not in a relationship, and let's say the other person is in a relationship with another there, sometimes the other person, the one who is not there, can find that intimacy very, very threatening. So that, as an example, meet with a friend, a woman friend.
She and I have a very good
connection and friendship, intimacy, a lot of really good sharing going on, nice energy between the two of us. And it can happen, and it has happened, that her lover, her partner, her husband has felt very threatened by it. Not because there's been any act, not because there's anything going on behind closed door, but threatened by the intimacy. And it isn't easy for the understanding to take place. And some people, maybe in this room and elsewhere, find it difficult to let their partner have a really close, good, deep friendship with somebody else. Man or woman. But in our culture and environment and what we've been talking about this evening, I think that is part of the exploration. That's part of the respect and the trust. Because two people, at least in my experience, cannot meet every single need for the other. Yes, sir.
Are you against one-night stands if both partners know in advance that it's going to be a one-night stand?
You have no experience.
No, yes, do. You answer, please. You answer yourself. I think you are not against.
No.
So why do you need approval from us?
Before he gave an example of one partner of the two who seeks for something deep. But he didn't give the example of the both partners don't seek for something deep.
Who would you like to answer the question?
You.
Are there any other things we? It's just about time to finish. No. I don't like either from outside, actually, nor from within, the voice of control. To control, in this case, would be to say, no, it can't work, it doesn't work, it's not right, it's immoral, it's unethical, it's insensitive, etc. I don't think that's helpful. It has a certain kind of repressive feeling about it, to me, there. But to repeat and labour the point a little bit, that where there is some wisdom and understanding and clarity there, that in that, I would say, and I do know of situations where it has worked. I mean, I've been in a relationship with women who told me of the one night thing, did not have any harmful, painful, distressing effect. Spent a lovely night, in this case, with a man, there, with no consequences for her or for him. If, where I express my reservation, and it is, and it's touched that place of longing, you know, and the wish, if it does that, the other person who has not felt that, I would say, has
a responsibility not to withdraw, but to communicate, to talk about, to share, to see if it is possible, with love, to make the transition to friendship, if he or she knows clearly that he or she does not want to be in an intimate relationship, though the two have shared the bed together for the night. Okay?
Do you know the word samsara?
Samsara?
This is samsara. Christos also surprised me. If you are aiming for a place of centering, it's better for you to meditate together, to sit and talk. I think in my, I traveled the samsara for long, and I feel that I was hurting and being hurt from one night stands. When I had more masculine attitude, I didn't notice it, but when I become more softer and more feminine, I realized I'm hurting myself. And so I think there's not really a situation when two people come there without expectation, go out of it without expectation. Something of the heart, something is there, and then shakshuk. Shakshuk. Avoid shakshuka, that's what I think. Yes,
I have a question about the why issue. Does it have to be the why has to be for someone, for a person, for a public? The intention should be for someone else, or it could be
only when it has to do with creation. If you create something, you can be with yourself, and there's no question. But if you want to create something, you have to know why. Who are you addressing? Who are you trying to help?
It's for me.
It's good, very good answer. If you realize that you are trying to help yourself, you don't have to publish a book. You just write it. For example, a book is a good example. You are writing the book, it's like therapy for you, and you don't publish it. It's okay, you leave it. It was a creation, it came out of you. Because it is for you. Most of the people that create, create because they want others to enjoy or experience something. And then, become more complicated. Because so many people did things without awareness and then got hurt or hurt others. So, just be clear. Just be clear. I remember my friend went in Shittim. In the first years of Shittim, we were fighting all the time because we were a commune. And in communes, people, you know, like in Chalutzim, in the first beginning, always the beginning had the more energy and we were fighting all the time. And I was like, my ego was there because I was channeling this place, and I was hurting so much. People were pointing me and blaming, and I was like a director. I came from television. I knew what I'm doing, but then there was circle and the circle had voice, big balagan. And I remember one day someone told me,
one of the friends was a Hasidic
guy. He came and brought me a whisper from the Kabbalah. He said, tell me, when a thing is closer to his, I would say it in English, mahut.
Essence.
When a thing is closer to its essence, he opens his eyes and waited for an answer. No answer. When a thing is closer to its essence, what is it? It's a philosophical question. I said, tell me, please, help me with this. He said, when it first came out from the havaya, from the existence. The moment you cut it, the idea, the moment it comes into manifestation, after when it goes to manifestation, it gets balagan. That's what happened in Shittim. So many people wanted to, but the first moment, this is the moment of meditation. And you have to keep it. If you want to be a creator, if you want to make a change in the world, remember, what was it? Where were you? What happened to you? In the moment you decided to make change and not stay, because it could stay there in the existence. It's a great moment of creation. If you call it, you can go all the way with your book, with your ashram, with your mufti, with your that's the way.
A little
more.
Just let's have a silent minute together. And rather interesting in the flow of things. He's talking more about meditation, and I'm talking more about tantra. So let's have a quiet minute together. May all beings live with love. May all beings appreciate the deep intimacies with life. May all beings love liberation and the profound sense of empathy with all. Thank you very, very much, everybody, for coming and listening. It was a delight, and thank you very much for coming too.